Hi, everyone. Before we start, this is just a quick announcement to let you know that I'm giving away 3 signed copies of my book, The Fix. They'll be autographed by me, Gillian Anderson, and Jennifer Nadel, who both wrote my foreword. As well as this, you'll also receive 1 apparel item from my store, www.michellepekang.com. And you'll also get an opportunity to be featured on my podcast. All you have to do is leave a book review on Amazon and you'll automatically go into the draw to win. The winners will be announced on LinkedIn on April 15th. So get in it to win it.
If you open an American history book, what you get at worst is a paragraph or two and at best a couple of pages that teaches about slavery. It teaches about slavery in isolation. And then Black Americans pretty much disappear from the American narrative for 100 years and they reappear with Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement. And then Dr. King marches on Washington, has a dream, and then Black people would disappear again from the story and everything is okay. And we're just in denial about so much of who we are, meaning that we can't ever resolve these issues because we cannot actually stand to face them.
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you're listening to The Fix, a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond.
They say our people were born on the water. When it occurred, no one can say for certain. Perhaps it was in the second week or the third, but surely by the fourth, when they had not seen their land or any land for so many days that they lost count. It was after the fear had turned to despair and the despair to resignation. And the resignation gave way, finally, to resolve. They knew then that they would not hug their grandmothers again, or share a laugh with a cousin during his nuptials, or sing their babies softly to sleep with the same lullabies that their mothers had once sung to them. The teal eternity of the Atlantic Ocean had severed them so completely that it was as if nothing had ever existed before, that everything they ever knew had simply vanished from the earth.
This is an excerpt from the 1619 Project, an ongoing initiative from the New York Times Magazine that began in August 2019 on the 400th anniversary of the beginning of American slavery. The project aims to reframe the country's history by placing the consequences of slavery and the contributions of Black Americans at the very center of our national narrative. This project was led by New York Times' Nicole Hannah-Jones, whose work has examined slavery's modern legacy and reframed the way we understand this history and the contributions of Black Americans. Failing to understand the implications our history has today makes us blind to the inequalities that confront Black men and women in America. For example, early data from multiple jurisdictions examining rates of coronavirus in the United States shows that Blacks account for a disproportionate and in some cases shockingly high share of cases or deaths. In both Louisiana and Chicago, as an example, recent statistics show that roughly 70% of coronavirus deaths occurred amongst Blacks, even though they're a minority in both of these areas. The long history of both overt and structural racism in society affects access to healthcare and the quality of treatment provided. On this episode, Nicole will unpack how the toughest challenges we're facing today have their roots in slavery, and why ignoring our history prevents us from solving the inequalities that persist today. According to most history books, the United States became a country in 1776 and drafted a constitution in 1787. It seems simple enough, right? Not so fast. According to the 1619 Project, America's origins actually take hold in August 1619, when a Flemish privateer stopped near Point Comfort and sold 20 black slaves to the colonists of Virginia. Detailing the widespread, cruel practice of African slavery in the English colonies, the 1619 Project provides a different account of how America came to be. Here, Nicole details the aims behind the project.
So the project is a project that is commemorating 400th anniversary of the first Africans being sold into slavery in Virginia, so in British North America. It's not a history, though it has a lot of history, but the project is really trying to look at the ongoing legacy of slavery and to show that you can look across American institutions and still see that that legacy is very much alive, that we have not dealt with that, and in ways positive and, of course, many negative ways. And I think for me, what was so important was I've been working on really trying to expose the architecture of racial inequality in America for really all of my journalistic career. And so much of this operates invisibly, and we have really been taught to marginalize the centrality of slavery in America and simultaneously to pretend that this was a long time ago and that we don't have any ongoing effects of the institution. And clearly we could see what happened in 2016, where we follow up the historic election of the first black president with the election of a man that many consider to be a white nationalist. And while this is not in any way what drove the project was this anniversary and the opportunity it provided to really assess the legacy. But the timing happened to be, I think, at a time in America where so many, particularly white Americans, were trying to understand how a country could do those two things back to back. And I think this project explains America to itself in a way that many of us have never been taught.
Denial is the refusal to accept reality in order to protect oneself from a painful thought, event, or feeling. It's a common defense mechanism that gives a person time to adjust to distressful situations. For example, a person confronted with engaging in racist behavior might deny the issue and then decide to become upset with the victim for raising the issue. This all-too-common response is a way to avoid having to deal with difficult or distressing topics. Ultimately, though, it prevents us from understanding our biases and prejudices and confronting them. Here, Nicole explains what happens when an entire country is in denial about its past.
So clearly we have in America, and I would argue we have been engaged in a centuries-long propaganda campaign. And in some ways, this does not make America unique. Every nation wants to tell itself a glorified version of its own history. And every nation creates a national memory that kind of upplays the good aspects of a country and a culture and downplays the bad aspects. But we have in America really perfected this to a degree of collective amnesia that makes it impossible for us to have a true understanding of the foundations of our country, of the history of our country, and why our country is like it is today. And I think there are some reasons for that. Almost all societies, of course, practiced some form of slavery. But we truly are unique in that we are the only country that was born of the ideas of the universal rights of men, of universal inalienable equality, while also engaging in a brutal system of chattel slavery. And that does make us unique. And because of that, we have, I think, uniquely engaged in an ongoing effort to really repress that founding paradox and hypocrisy. And that has meant that we have treated slavery as marginal to the United States. We have treated it as somehow incidental that approximately 40% of our founders were enslavers, that 10 of our first 12 presidents were enslavers, that certain colonists even joined the revolution was to preserve slavery. We have downplayed how central slavery was to the economy of our country, that it wasn't simply a regional matter, but that the entire nation benefited from slavery in one way or another, that so many of our elite universities, our Ivy League, were funded with dollars that came from the enslavement of people that our textile industry, I mean, just across the board. But instead, if you open an American history book, what you get at worst is a paragraph or two, and at best a couple of pages, that teaches about slavery. It teaches about slavery in isolation. And then Black Americans pretty much disappear from the American narrative for 100 years, and they reappear with Dr. King and the Civil Rights Movement. And then Dr. King marches on Washington, has a dream, and then Black people would disappear again from the story, and everything is okay. And what that has done is that when we look across our society and we see that we're the most carceral nation in the world, that we're the only Western industrialized nation and actually one of the few nations in the world, period, that until recently allowed teenagers and children to be put to death, that until recently allowed children to serve life without the possibility of parole. When you look and see that we're the only Western industrialized nation that doesn't have universal health care, that we have the stingiest social safety net, all of these things that make us unique actually make us unique because of our unique history. And we're just in denial about so much of who we are, meaning that we can't ever resolve these issues because we cannot actually stand to face them.
Alarming health department statistics across the United States indicate that Black people are getting sicker and dying at higher rates from COVID-19 compared to white people. Decades of research show that higher levels of discrimination and bias are associated with elevated risks of a broad range of diseases, from high levels of stress hormones to blood pressure to obesity and early death. All of those underlying conditions put people at higher risk for bad outcomes from COVID-19. Here, Nicole explains this issue in more detail.
So when you look at the pandemic in the United States, Black Americans, not people of color, but specifically Black Americans, are dying at the highest rates in the areas, all of the areas, where we have racial data. That's because Black Americans are the most segregated in America even today. Black Americans are the poorest in America even today. The only other group that is poorer than Black Americans are Native Americans, and that's the other group that didn't choose to be part of America. Black Americans are the most likely to work in the type of service sector jobs that did not allow Black people to isolate and work from home, most likely to take public transit, which are all signs of having less wealth and less income. So we can very directly trace why this pandemic is proving so lethal to Black people back to the history of slavery, the history of racial apartheid, and our general belief that Black Americans are less than and less deserving. In fact, there's a piece in the 1619 Project that I assigned, and it used our inability to get over racism to really show why we're the only Western industrialized country without universal health care. And the polling is very clear on this. If white Americans believe that large numbers of Black Americans will benefit from a social program, their support for that program declines. So how does that show up in a pandemic? Well, Black people have the highest rate of being uninsured in the country. That means that they're already going to be sicker when the pandemic hits. They're less likely to be able to get testing to get seen until they have reached a point of being an emergency where doctors then have to treat them. And so, of course, they're going to die from this sooner. Whereas if we were a more equitable nation, Black people would have better access to healthcare and be a lot less vulnerable. And I think the last thing that I'm worried about is we have not had racial data until about a week and a half ago. We started getting the first racial data on the coronavirus here. And you almost saw this immediate turn once it started becoming widely known that Black people were dying at the highest rates, that suddenly we went from it's no one's fault and we have to rally all of our support to save Americans to this rhetoric. If you look at the comments on these articles, the rhetoric being, well, Black people are unhealthy, they're obese, and so it's their own fault that they're dying from corona. So you see this lack of empathy that occurs immediately when we think that the victim is Black. And that is a very, very old legacy in the United States that can be traced all the way back to slavery.
Everyday racism is what happens when we deny racism and choose to ignore the roots of our biases and prejudices. Awareness is a practice. It's something each of us can choose to do by investing our time and energy to educate ourselves about racism and understand how this shapes our world today. This is the first step, because as Nicole says, it's what we do with this awareness that counts.
To me, this project was about forcing a confrontation with the actual legacy and reality of America. And I think it is the way that this kind of collective forced amnesia around slavery and racism has played out is it means that white people can kind of have this collective innocence around the institution of slavery and its legacy. And they can feel no sense of responsibility in trying to eradicate these racial inequalities that we still see. Everything that you can measure in the United States, Black and Native people are at the bottom. Every single thing. That's not incidental. But when we are able to say slavery was 150 years ago, just get over it, then we don't feel as a country, and particularly white Americans themselves, that they have to do anything to try to alleviate that inequality. And instead, of course, what we see is this blaming that Black people have the same rights as anyone else, if they just tried harder and, you know, wanted more, worked harder, then we wouldn't see those inequalities. So to me, the very first step in being able to get the collective will to do the things to bring about equality is there has to be an acknowledgement of where we actually are and how we got here and where the blame should lie. And we just haven't had that. So what I hoped was that by creating a project that isn't just telling a single story, but is showing through a series of deeply reported articles that across all of these aspects of American life, things as diverse as traffic patterns in major cities, healthcare, democracy, criminal justice, wealth, that you can look across all these areas of American life and trace these inequalities to slavery, that having that knowledge, I guess I kind of liken it to taking the red pill in the Matrix, that once you read the project, you can't just go about your life and pretend you didn't know. You can't just see the inequality and pretend you have no idea how it got there. It's forcing an acknowledgement that choices have been made and choices are still made, and that there's never been a true reckoning nor restitution. And in doing that, then perhaps we can see the ground for an actual reckoning and actual restitution. You know, when, of course, white Americans love Dr. King, even though the majority of white Americans opposed Dr. King at the time of his death. And they kind of isolate him in this bubble of a few pages in I Have a Dream speech. But by the time Dr. King was assassinated in 1968, he realized that simply giving Black people the rights they should have already had, which is what the civil rights movement did, was not enough. That having the ability to go shop where you want or buy a home where you want is useless if you economically cannot afford to go in the restaurant, or you economically cannot afford to purchase in a higher quality neighborhood. And so right before his death, he was really pushing on this economic redistribution that Black people needed to have restitution paid along with civil rights. And of course, that's when he was killed. That's really the next step. We have to do something to deal with these glaring wealth and resource inequalities that Black Americans have as a legacy of slavery and apartheid. And most white Americans oppose it. I just feel like if you read the entire 1619 Project and you're open-minded about it, you have to have a shift in your thinking on that.
It is such an honor to interview Nicole about her important work and unpack how slavery continues to shape Americans' beliefs, behaviors, and experiences. Thank you so much for tuning in today. I really hope you found this episode as insightful as I did. Before I go, just a quick reminder, please sign up to my weekly newsletter at michellepking.com. You can also learn more about how to be featured on the show through the site. Thanks again for tuning in, and I'll catch you all again next week.